I don't know. It might be.
Yeah. Right. Well, hey, everybody. Wow, I butchered the mess out of that. See, we don't edit this video. We just go live. But anyways, guys, you already know the drill. I'm streaming on a few of my platforms. Here goes all my social media pages. Like I say all the time, I got the best social media pages ever. All right. Forget about Instagram. Instagram, I don't like you no more, man, because like they've been shadow banning me, so I'm refusing to post. But I still have the best Instagram page ever. It's Trouble Don't Last. So I'm streaming on my X page, Twitter. All right, so that's Trouble Don't Last. I'm streaming on my Facebook, LinkedIn page, Sean Christopher Jenkins. I'm also streaming on my YouTube channel, Upload Past Crossroads, and all the videos that me and Justin go live on, or all the videos that are on my YouTube channel, are always posted on my podcast, Upload Past Crossroads, on every podcast platform you can think of. All right, so let's go ahead and get to it. So I got a treat for you guys today. So if you go to my YouTube channel, Upload Past Crossroads, me and Justin have a lot of playlists on here. We're doing a lot of things on here. So Upload Past Crossroads, you scroll down, you see that I have a section called Our Podcast, where all the people who go live with me on my YouTube channel gets all the recognition in the world. And I show all the videos I've done with them right here on Our Podcast, that section. So you're going to see more videos with me and Justin. There it is right there. All right, but on my YouTube channel, I have a lot of playlists. One of the playlists is titled Book Breakdowns or Book Reviews. Another playlist that I just started is on the book we're going to talk about today, The Old Testament for a Complex World, How the Bible's Dynamic Testimony Points to New Life for the Church. So this is the book. It's by Cameron B.R. Howard, right? So yeah, this book is legendary, man. You guys did not see that at all. I did not see how small the font was on that. But yeah, so this book is epic, man. So I had to read this for seminary school, just in case you're just watching this for the first time. I just started seminary school this semester. My last class is actually this coming up Monday. And oh, yeah.
Man, can't believe you're finished with it.
Right, yeah. I just hope I can finish on my assignments. I got an exegesis paper to do, which is going to be like 12 to 15 pages. Then I have I got a final paper to do that's 12 to 15 pages for another class. And then, like I said, I had a presentation to do on this. So actually, yeah, going back to this book, one of the classes I'm in, it's called The Old Testament, The Introduction to the Old Testament in the Hebrew Bible. That's one of the classes I'm in. The other class I'm in is Christian Belief Today. All right, and so for Introduction to the Old Testament and Hebrew Bible, we had to read this book, and we had to do a presentation on it. So, Justin, I was trying to tell you before the call, I did my presentation last class period. I was the only one to do it in my class because, like, I told my teacher I would do a YouTube video on it, which we already did, the atomic particle collision one. Yeah, but, like, I didn't want to do that one because he said focus on a case study. And to him, that wasn't really focusing on a case study. I thought that was, but so, yeah. Yeah, so, all right, guys. So we're going to get to this video, all right? So today's video.
Up so much, I got it during Black Friday, too.
It's right, been a good yeah.
Before, which I just like the idea of, like, applying the Old Testament to the, like, modern life, too. Because I feel like we always consider the Old Testament as, like, oh, like, Bible times. It doesn't apply, but it's been a good read so far, so I'm excited for this video.
Yeah, I'm glad you got the book, because now, like, we're gonna really go deep. Like, that's what we did in class. Like, when I did my presentation in class, like, everybody, I mean, I'm surprised all the feedback I got. Like, everybody literally commented, gave me feedback, but like they gave their own two cents of like what they got from what I presented to them. So that's what I'm about to do today. Like, I already made the slides for that presentation, which my teacher, it's funny, before I present it, he barely knows me, but he knows that I do YouTube and I stream and I talk a lot. So, like, he was like, he went into class and said, so whatever Sean does, it's not a requirement for you guys to do. You guys know he's a social media mogul or whatever. He said, you know, he really knows technology. So don't worry about copying what he does for his presentation. Just present whatever case study you want to present. And Sean's going to do his thing. So, like, I was surprised he said that. So, yeah, I had a whole presentation set, just like I'm about to do for this video, and I just threw out, like, what stood out to me the most from the book, and that's what I'm talking about for today's video. So, yeah, I'm giving a huge introduction, Justin. But, yeah, let's go ahead and get to it, all right? So, with this book is called The Old Testament for, I'm gonna make it bigger so we can all see it, because I can see it pretty good, but I know you guys can't. So, all right, so the title of the book's called The Old Testament for a Complex World, How the Bible's Dynamic Testimony Points to New Life for the Church. It's by Cameron B.R. Howard. All right, so on the table of contents, it gives, it's a really small book, actually. It's only like 100 and...
Yeah, not as big as I thought it would be.
Right, it's 126 pages. Yeah. So it's really tiny. So it's only a few chapters in the book. But each chapter is so powerful. Like, each chapter expounds upon another chapter, and it brings back another case study that it was referencing and stuff like that. But anyways, for today's video, ideally, I want to go through each chapter with Justin and just pull up excerpts so everybody understands what was written in the book, just in case you guys don't get it. And we just break it down, because all this stuff that the author was talking about is so applicable to everybody's ministry. It's going to help everybody preach the Bible in a way that makes the Bible interesting and desirous, and everybody will want to read it and get a revelation and all those stuff, right? All right, so I'm going to focus on that a lot today. So today's video, I'm focusing on chapter 2 with Justin. It's called Adapting Popular Culture, page 29, right? And so the title of the video, if I could title it anything, would be Preach for Today, right? Because the church and the preacher must be in a day's time period so they can reach the people in a day's time period, not the people from 1880 in a slavery time, not the people during Jim Crow time in the 1960s, not the people from, I don't know, Jesus's time period. I'm gonna use an example, right? So I saw this in a book that we were reading, but they didn't give this analogy, but this is just how I took it, with what I read, and even with what I'm reading for this book, right? So let's say, you know, that used to have, newspapers used to be real popular back in the day, right? So this is from February 6, 1950. So I'm going to use an analogy with you guys. Let's say, and this is what the author's talking about, like Preach for Today, so the Bible is more relevant, more relatable, more understandable to the people of your time period, right? So let's say I tell you, let's say you want to invest in stocks, right? So everybody wants a lot of money. Everybody do, right? And so instead of investing for the stocks today, in today's time period, you decide you want to invest in stocks from the 1950s. So you look at the newspaper from February 6, 1950, and look at the stocks from that newspaper. You guys can barely see it, but the only stock I know right here is Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is right here. Okay, I see Chrysler, but I'm pretty sure Chrysler isn't as popular as it used to be, right? Yeah. Yeah. I see JCPenney. What is JCPenney doing on here?
Well, JCPenney, I think, was like a big outlet back then. Right.
Wow, that is crazy. I see JCPenney. But other than that, guys, like, I see Dr. Pepper. I see DuPont. Okay, let me name some stuff you guys don't know. Gulf Oil. That's General Electric. People know that. Central AIM Transport. Eastern Airlines. Dow Chemical. Douglas Aircraft. Curtis Wright. Crane. The whole point is, like, a lot of this stuff, a lot of these companies don't exist anymore. A lot of these companies have gone bankrupt or been bought out and it turned into a different company. So that company is irrelevant now. By the way, it goes, if you try to tell people, like if you're an investing group and you try to tell people to invest in stocks and you're telling them about stocks from 1950s and saying these are the stocks to invest in, you should invest in these because they popped off. I'm telling you now, Coca-Cola is not going to go up like it did in the 1950s in today's time period. Coca-Cola has already ran its course, right? I would even venture to say Apple has kind of ran its course a little bit, because Apple hasn't moved in like, since like 2015 around there. Like, it's been at the same price since 2015, even after the coronavirus, right? So the whole point is, some people preach the Bible in a way, and I know you guys can attest to this. You go to some church and you hear a preacher preach. They preach in a way that's relatable for people in Jesus' time period, not relatable to the children today, not relatable to the people today. So a lot of people are preaching in a different time period than the people that are in their congregation. And then they wonder why nobody's coming to church. Nobody wants to hear a message from them. Nobody understands what we're saying. How can we reach the young people, right? You're not going to reach no young people talking about stocks from the 1950s when we got Tesla, Palantir, Planet 13, Avant Brands. I can keep on naming names that are new. New companies.
You're just listing off your stocks, aren't you? To me before.
Right. That's all what came in my head. But those companies are way more relevant than Climax, Molybdenum, or Briggs, Borg Warner. Like, what are these companies, man? Like, ABOT Laboratories, like, so just from me reading this book and a lot of books I had in seminary, I thought about that. Like, people literally, in the AME Church especially, because you guys know I'm in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Honestly, I hate the AME Church. I don't like it, so I don't even know why I'm in it. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I know they have a need. And they have a need more so than any other denomination in the United States, in my eyes, right? So, like, and the need is for change. The need is for innovation. The need is for something different. Because all there's in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Church, they're so used to doing the same thing every single Sunday. And they'll never bulge from it. So I'm gonna use a few passages from the book to really hone in on that point, just that analogy. I probably shouldn't start out the video like that, but I mean, it's gonna make it even more understandable and stuff like that. Justin, you ready? You want me to just go ahead and read?
Yeah, right. I'm ready to go.
All right, so chapter 2 for the book, The Old Testament for a Complex World, is titled Adapting Popular Culture. All right, and what just happened? My laptop just did something. It kind of shut in and shut out real quick. All right, so when I read these excerpts, it's going to answer these questions. So when I basically take what the author wrote from this book and I show you guys some of the stuff that she wrote, it's going to answer this question. And this is the focus for today's video. You know, how are we to reach the world for Christ? And the title of today's video is Preach for Christ. I mean, Preach for Today. Right. So on page 31 of The Old Testament for a Complex World by Cameron Howard, it reads this. It says, in other words, many of the texts that we now consider sacred were simply the literature of the day. Though it seems an obvious point, it is important to remember that an ancient Israelite religion whose practice is reflected in biblical texts was not yet a religion of the book. The classification and the canonization of the group of books we know as the Hebrew Bible came even later. Thus, as we consider how these narratives adapt popular culture, the title of this chapter, we are also simply marking that they were popular culture. In their early days, they were not yet in a book set apart and revered in a way that we might think of the Bible's authority today. Justin, I talked a lot, man, so I'm gonna let you start off, man.
Man, I'm glad you included this excerpt because that's what stuck with me when I read it. It's crazy to think that the Bible back then was not like religious text. It was like popular culture literature back then. It's like what scribes would like. Of course, like there was some like religious significance to these back then, but it was basically just what like scribes would have to like write down and spread to like their families and the friends, or it was passed down by oral tradition. So I feel like it is really important to see it that way because like in order to relate to the audience today, we have to realize that the context of these texts, the context of the Bible, the context of the Old Testament was also written for the people back then as well. So I felt like the biggest goal that the author is trying to do is like find the bridge between the two. Like, how can we relate stories for people back then to an audience now? Like, how can we translate those into like something applicable? Like, that's something I always enjoy about Bible studies is like you look at the context, but you also see how does this apply to my life or what are the applications to it?
Right. Yeah, so I'm gonna really break down this excerpt real quick, right, from the book. So in other words, many of the texts that we now consider sacred were simply the literature of the day. I'm gonna stop there. Yeah. So like a lot of times people look at the Bible as something sacred, like something holy, or like you know the words I'm trying to use, guys. Like, but in that time period, the texts were just literature of the day. It was just popular culture, like the author said right here. It was just popular culture, right? So, like, it was just something that was understood. It related with the time periods. It was not something afar off and not relatable at all, right? Literally everybody understood what was written, right? So a lot of times when people, that's the question. When you preach the Bible to other people, when you preach the gospel and give it to other people, it doesn't make sense. See, literally, when the scrolls wrote in that time period and translated what, no, when the scribes wrote what they were translating to what we have today from what was there in their time period, from their people that wrote those scrolls, like those people who wrote those scrolls, those scribes, like they were in the culture. They knew the time period. They were in the now, right? So they understood how to reach people, how to make stuff understandable to the people they were writing to, right? And so that's the thing. Like that, just that is a revelation in and of itself. So the whole point of the book is like through the formation of the Bible, through how the Bible came together, the author's trying to show us through this book that, yeah, we can receive a revelation. We can receive guidance as to how to preach the gospel, how to receive a new revelation from God, just all those things. So the Bible, one of my points I had was, you know, the Bible was relevant in their time. It went with their culture. It was not outdated. It was not out of touch. It was not irrelevant, right? So the question is your church relevant? Is your church outdated? Is your church out of touch? Are you out of touch? Because if that's the case, that's a problem, right? You're talking about how to reach, how can we reach young people? That's the biggest question in ME Church in the 13th District in Tennessee and Kentucky. And they have the answer, but they don't do anything about it. The thing you have to do about it is change. It's through innovation. It's through being updated, not outdated, right? So like this, you get the answer just from how the formation of the Bible came into being, right? You got to preach for today's time period, not 100 years from, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago. All them people are dead. You got to preach for the generation today, the generations today, because more than one generation alive right now. You know what I'm saying? So, and there's a different way to reach every generation. So you got to know how to reach them. You know, what was their time period like? What was their culture like? Because every generation is different. Every decade is different. Every time period is different, right? And you got to be willing to adapt. A lot of churches, a lot of preachers, a lot of followers of God aren't willing to adapt. But the Bible is adaptable. That's the thing. We're going to talk about that when we get to chapter 3. But basically, the Bible is so relatable. It's so updated, right? It's not even close to being out of touch, right? Scrolls and the people and the scribes who wrote the Bible, right? They were so relevant to the people of their time period that it makes the Bible even relevant to today, right? So you can even look at people like that, like Billy Graham. His messages will never die. Like, it will always be relevant because he related to the people of his time period. And so when we go back and look at his sermons, we kind of know the time period. We know the history more than they knew it because they were living it. They didn't get to experience it like that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, because we have hindsight's 2020, right? Like, his messages are even more relatable now than even probably when he preached because it was that relatable. So the question is for preachers, teachers of the Bibles, even Sunday school people, even no matter who you are, believers in general, you're trying to preach the gospel to people, you can't exclude the culture. You can't exclude different generations. You can't exclude a decade. You can't exclude a different time period because the Bible doesn't do that. You know, it doesn't exclude the stories of our day or movies of their day or the TV shows of their day, which was the plays because they didn't have television back then. But you get what I'm saying? Like even the music, the plays, performances, poetry, games, technology, knowledge, science, like all of it is coming together and can be used to make the Bible more relatable to everybody, right? So we can't exclude those things in our culture because the Bible doesn't even do that. Even the people who wrote the Bible, the translators, right? Even they related these things to what they were trying to write, right? And so even that is kind of debatable. And I know some people are like, man, that don't make no sense, man. This is a false gospel. No, if you look at like chapter 3, when we get to it, I'm gonna go ahead and spoil it. But chapter 3 talked about how there's flood accounts in the Bible, the story of Noah, right? And then there's court stories in the Bible. So Esther, Nehemiah. So there's different people, you know, in the Bible, main characters, right? Who were, the setting was in a court, like with a king and the king's horsemen, you know, and chariot, you know what I'm trying to say, like the whole court story. That's what it's called. So like in that time period, the scrolls used the stories of their time period. Like there's stories of flood accounts. There are stories of court accounts. And they told the story of God through those stories in their culture to make God more relevant for the people of their day. So I know that could be kind of troubling to some people, like, man, that don't make, that's a false gospel. Like, but no, that's how the Bible came about into being, right? So you can't exclude those things because it is included. Like, what, how the Bible came into being. So just, I'll let you go ahead and talk, man. I know you got stuff.
Yeah, I would even go, I would even like take your question, like, how are we out, how are the pastors today out of touch, or are they out of touch with today's culture? I would even like rephrase that. In what ways are today's churches like closing the doors to today's youth or today's audience? Because I feel like that's a lot of times we stick, and I feel like the older we get, we like to stick with like what makes us feel comfortable, our habits. Sean and I before the video, we were talking about like how our habits make us. And like as you get older, you get more solidified into your habits. You get comfortable in like how the gospel should be preached, like how God should be represented, how Jesus needs to be represented. And that makes it really hard, I think, to connect with like a younger audience as well. Yao and I just watched this movie called Jesus Revolution, and it was really good. I was a little worried about it because at first I thought they were going to talk about how the hippies are in the right and how their lifestyle is all about like love and peace while ignoring like the drugs and sex. But no, they addressed everything, which I thought was neat. But they it was basically like looking on both sides about how like the hippies were like, they were looking for a spiritual awakening. They were just like looking in the wrong places, unfortunately. But then it was like looking at the older church members and how they didn't recognize a need in today's youth for like love and understanding. And instead they like were very hard-hearted, or not all of them. There was like, you saw character development, but at the beginning they were like, their hearts were hardened to like a spiritual awakening in today's youth. And it's because, and the reason they weren't able to pull in more people was because they were like inadvertently closing their doors. They thought this is the way that it should be done. When instead of like winning over hearts as they should. And I think that's a really important part of like understanding how the books of the Bibles are a collection of stories, is because it does show like those are times that God is winning hearts. It's not, he wasn't necessarily trying to lay down like, this is how the church should be run, or these are like super religious texts, although they are a good foundation. I'm not trying to say that at all, but we do have to recognize they are a product of that culture as well. And it's going to follow some of those storytelling templates, or it's going to follow some of those models. So we have to find a way to like translate those to, okay, what's the applicability for that today? Because as Sean was saying before, like if we are too concerned with how it's preached, I feel like we're going to miss like a lot of, we're going to like lose a lot of hearts or lose a lot of souls, just because maybe we've hurt somebody or we've been too judgmental or legalistic on how someone's life is being ran.
Right. And that's something else too. Like, you don't know, you don't really know something until you can teach it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I would even go further. You don't really know something until you can make disciples. And like what you have said has transformed lives. So like, I mean, it's different. You can go to church all you want, right? But the preacher And if the church is not like transforming your life, transforming your relationship with God for the better, right? Like helping you to elevate your game in all facets of life. That's what God does. That's the power of being, you know, with other believers like me and Justin, or like just being around. I mean, when two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. That's what Jesus said in Matthew. So what happens when it's a whole church, you know, like a 50 or 100 or thousands of people? Like, that's when you should really be feeling the Spirit of God move in your life. Like, whatever happens in life, it doesn't even matter, because you're such on fire for God, and all you are, you're, I mean, you're in heaven, right? And your feet are just dangling down the earth. Like, you're on cloud nine all the time. That's what it feels like. Like, when a church is just vibrant with, I mean, in all different ways, right? So, like, yeah, if it's at that point, then basically, like, the preacher, the teachings, like, just everything that's going on in the church, like, is simplified. It's understandable. It's easy to fathom and relate to people. You know, the messages are easy to relate to other people and relate to you, right? It goes with everybody. Like, I'll use an example. I went to Elevation Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, like, from 2016 to 2018 with Pastor Stephen Furtick, right? Everybody knows that name, right? So it's a mega church. Everybody knows Elevation Worship, Christian music, right? So, like, that's the church I went to right when I graduated from college. And before I even went there, I used to work at a children consignment shop called Children Trove. And, like, every day when I was there, like, I was the closer. So I worked from, like, I don't know, 5 to closing time, 11 or something like that. So after classes. And I would just be by myself late at night closing. So I'd be mopping the floor. And then the restaurant right beside me was a sushi restaurant. And they'd be having music bumping in there. And I used to just, like, have my headphones in. I'd always be listening to Pastor Stephen Furtick preach his sermons. I always hear him talk about e-groups, but, you know, life groups, Bible studies. That's what he would always talk about and market. And he said, like, you got to join one, man. And I used to be like, man, I pray I get to go to Elevation. Like, I prayed to go to a church like Elevation. I didn't know God was going to, you know, pave a way for me to graduate from college, get an $80,000 a year job with Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Elevation Church is just 6 minutes away from where I live, right? One of the, like, they got like 15 locations now. So, like, most of them in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, yeah, so, like, God paved the way for me to get that experience, right? And the Bible has never been so relatable. Well, that's a lie. But, like, you guys get what I'm saying. Like, I've never been in an environment like that when it comes to a church. You see what I'm saying? Like, where everybody was hungry. Everybody wanted a word from God. Everybody wanted to, you know, enhance their relationship with God. Everybody wanted a new revelation, right? And I say all that to say, like, every single time Pastor Frederick preached, or whoever preached, because he didn't preach every single Sunday, but he preached the majority of the time, like, probably, like, 82% of the time, 72% of the time, just depending on the year. But, like, every single person who spoke, man, every time they preached the Bible, it was so relatable. It related with everybody. So, like, everybody heard the message. Well, you can hear a message and get a different revelation from it. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same message. It's still the same thing.
Right.
And that's how it was. Like, every message was perfect. Like, could it have been better? Yeah. There was a few that could have been better. But they never sucked. Like, sometimes you go to church and the messages don't hit anything, right? Don't touch nobody. Like, one of the things, see, the AME church kind of, like, lowball it. And they're not the only ones. Like, they'd be like, man, if I could just reach one person, that's enough. No, forget that. Like, if you're having church, you need to try to reach everybody. We got to preach for the day, for the people today. So you're not going to, don't waste time preaching a message, going up in a pulpit on a Sunday when people are hungry for a word of God. Like, they're coming for some reason. But, like, in the AME church, in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, I can only speak for them. Like, and I know they're not the only ones. Like, they settle for less. Like, you know, just it's the mundane of them. Like, you know, it's just another Sunday. Like, I'll preach hard when, you know, Bishop is here. Or I'll preach hard when it's conference and everybody and all preachers around and I got to you know, sure, I got a little something, but I'm not going to preach hard, you know, with my 3-member congregation and everybody's over 70. Like, you know, because that's how some of the churches are, right? So, like, and it's like that because a lot of reasons, but may, the main reason is, like, they don't relate to every generation. They don't try to preach for the people in today's time period. Like, and not just that, they don't want to change. They're afraid of change, right? And when you do that, you're not going to reach young people. Young people, in the church, young people and old people are important. You can't just have one or the other. And that's how some churches are. It's either an all young people church or it's an all old people church. But some churches have both, right? And both of them come with great revelation and just perfection. I'll wait to talk about that. Justin, you got anything else to say, man? Yeah. I'm talking a lot, man.
Oh, yeah, I really wanted to say, I like the point you made about how, like, lots of different people may read the same thing but get different message. I think that's a testament to, like, the Old Testament. And the book identifies that the Old Testament was actually written through different eras, through different cultures. Like, we always think, oh, it's just in biblical times. But no, it spans, like, centuries. Mm. So I think that's what makes it so useful in reaching out to, like, different people during that time, is because it was able to relate to so many different cultures. It was written by a lot of different authors and cultures, so it's able to direct almost different messages with the same word. And, like, that's, testify that as, like, the word being, like, alive, the word being God breathed. But I also think it's because, like, it has been written by, like, multiple people through different eras. And, like, that's what we need to do with the Bible now, as well as, like, how can we relate this to a new era?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just a good balance in there somewhere. I do think, like, the word is God-breathed. So we do treat it with a certain level of reverence. But yeah, as Sean was saying before, and out of the excerpt from the book, like, it was just kind of a product of its time as well. So there's a good balance in there somewhere where it's like, it is God's word, but it's heavily influenced by, like, people. Yeah. Like, we have to recognize that people, like, man, wrote these books. So there's, of course, they're going to be affected by, like, how they write it. Like, look at the Gospels. Some of them tell, like, the same story three or four different times, but in different ways, because they're trying to reach a different audience. Yeah. Like, yes, they were all influenced by God, but you can tell, like, they were all, like, a keen eye can notice that they were written for, like, different people or in different ways. So it's like, how can we, I don't know, like, people are hungry. How can we translate this in a way in which people can, like, eat that up?
Right. That's what I was going to say, too. All right. So I'm glad you said that. I need to start reading more excerpts. I've been talking forever. But I'm going to read the same one I read just a minute ago. So it's this last part that got me. It says, in their early days, they were not yet in a book set apart and revered in a way we might think of the Bible's authority today. So when it's talking about the biblical text and the biblical text in its early days, right, was just another text. It was just another writing. It was just another scroll, right? So, like, it wasn't as significant as it is today, right? And that's the thing. Like, even today's time period, right? Like, there's some stuff that we don't know that's significant right now that's going on, or, like, we hide it under the rug. It's like, it's not really a big deal. You know what? It's nonchalant to us. But, like, it's really a big deal. Like, in 100 years from now, like, it's going to be like, man, like, they were doing that. Like, this was huge. Like, but, like, we don't see the significance of it. But it is significant, right? Same thing, like, with the literature, the sacred writings of their time period. Like, it wasn't even sacred. It was just another thing. So that's why it's important, like, not to overlook the things in our culture, not to overlook what's happening in our world today. You can't be totally oblivious to it. If you are, you're going to miss out on reaching the people for you today. Right? Because the Bible has to be understood. That's the first thing. You have to break down the Bible and make it make sense to people. Right? And the greatest way to do that is through the movies, TV shows, books, different genres that are going around in our world today, right? That's the greatest way to make it simple. So that's a parable, like Jesus told in his time period. He was preaching in parables. And someone asked him, like, why do you preach in parables? Like, you know, because you guys want to understand it if I, you know, spoke from a heavenly perspective. So I had to break stuff down to you from your perspective, from an earthly perspective. So it makes sense, right? That's why even with preachers, like, we have to preach in parables, using stories, you know, even mythologies, like stuff like that to make it make sense to people, right? Make it what makes sense? Make God make sense. Make the Bible make sense. Make it relevant. So like when people hear a story again from the Bible, they're like, oh yeah, I know that. Like they could break it down. You know what I'm saying? Just from what you, the story, the game, the technology, whatever you use to reach them when it came to whatever text you're trying to preach, right? So like this is the greatest way to reach people for Christ. Like I asked everybody at the very beginning of the video, like, well, it was at the beginning, but it was at the beginning. Like I asked, you know, how do we reach people? How do we reach the world for Christ? Like this is one of the many ways. It's not just a one answer question. Like I'm about to read a lot of other excerpts, but in chapter two, yeah, and from the introduction of this book, it gave a summary of what chapter two would talk about. In chapter one is titled "The Bible's Dynamic Witness." All right, so it reads, the chapter emphasizes that new circumstances and new experiences can give rise to new methods of storytelling. And it encourages faith communities to reflect on how they are telling their own stories. All right. I'm going to read that again. But Justin, stop me if you want to say something, right? Mm-hmm. If something clicks. But and by the way, your outfit matches the book, by the way. Like,
hell yeah, it does.
Were you going for that? Were you going for that?
No, I just heard you were wearing like the vest, so I put on a vest over the shirt I already had on.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, this chapter emphasizes the new circumstances and new experiences. All right, so new circumstances and new experiences can arise to new methods of storytelling. Right. So let's flip it. Old circumstances and old experiences cannot give rise to new methods of storytelling. I mean, it could, but like,
yeah.
Who are you gonna be reaching at that point? Right? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what the author is trying to get us to think about with this book. She's just trying to tell us, like, there's so much new revelation to be getting from the Bible, from one story in the Bible, for example, right?
And so, like, I think we have to look at how Jesus chose his parables too. Yeah. Like, for parables, he chose occupations that people could relate to. Like farmers and shepherds, or like indentured servants, like those were like people Jesus was trying to reach. So he told parables about those people. Like Jesus himself came up with new stories, new parables to relate to that culture. And I think like that's exactly what the excerpt that you showed is trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, we got to really know what we're. I like what she said here. We got to reflect on how we are telling our stories or telling the Bible story, right? Because there's not one way to tell the Bible story. And that's what a lot of people try to force on the other people. Like even with the ME Church, like with board examiners, like they try to push us to preach a certain way, but there's not one set way to preach. Mm-hmm. There's not one set way to teach a message. Like a lot of people online who are like holy rollers and stuff like that, they really get annoyed when somebody tries to make the Bible like cool. Like that's the greatest way to put it. Yeah. Or somebody try to do something different with a message. They like for example, if I was like, I used to play, it wasn't even rap music. It was just like rap beats. Like the, what's it called? The instrumental. It wasn't even like, you can't even hear nobody rapping or anything. It was just an instrumental that sounds like rap. Yeah, that played while my short videos were played, right? So like one person would be like, man, why are you playing devil music? It was just an instrumental. Like it had no lyrics to it. But just because it was sounded like rap music, it was devil's music, right? So, but like it made the messages like cool to some people. But to some people, man, that's such, why are you playing the devil's music? It's just an instrumental. Like it had no message behind it. Like, you know, so like, but yeah, like new circumstances and new experiences can give rise to new methods of storytelling. So like a lot of times, like in the AME church, at least I can only speak for that. Like I hear the same message preached the same way, or I hear the same sermon preached the same exact way. And then what's really sad is some preachers even preach, like, for example, Christmas service. Like, they'll preach the same exact message every single Christmas. Or they'll preach the same Thanksgiving message every single Thanksgiving. Like, literally the same. Like, they don't change it at all. They just read the same script and everything. Like, what the heck? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's one thing I'm learning in seminary. Like, there's so much to learn. So many revelations to get from God. Like, you can preach the same, you can preach the same text for the rest of your life with the Bible, but preach it in a different way and get a new something new from it every single time, right? So like, but it's all dependent on, you know, your methods of storytelling, you know, your experience, right? Your knowledge, like, what's today's time? You're like, how are you gonna relate? Like, there's different ways to really play around with it to really make the Bible make sense. You see what I'm saying?
I will play devil's advocate a little bit there, just maybe because I see what you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say maybe you should like know your audience as well,
right?
Because like I've been to some Thanksgiving services where they say the same message, but because I'm a more mature Christian and I can like appreciate what they're saying, like I like the same sermon over and over. But like if I were new, or if I don't speak Christianese, then yeah, you would have to find new ways to connect to them. And I think that's really important. So like, I definitely think like know your audience would be an important thing for that before you just start trying to do new things. Cause I've also seen like, I've seen some like cringy Christian stuff that are trying to like be hip and cool to reach out to the new kids. And I think it loses some of its sustenance because of that.
Yeah.
So you got, I think there's a man, I use this word already too many times in this video, but there's a balance in there. Right. Like I do need to like make it relatable to kids. Like, cause kids aren't going to be like impressed by like, if you can like read the King James version of, the Advent or whatever, but like, you don't want to like start rapping like a white guy in order to reach out to the youth nowadays. Like you do want like the substance of what you're trying to preach to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm gonna read some more excerpts. Let's see where else we can go with this. So on page 59 of the book, Cameron B.R. Howard wrote, in chapter 2, we looked at examples of the ways ancient Israel told his stories by reworking existing popular genres to make particular claims about the God of Israel. So like, this is the whole point of the video, man. Like, you can use like it, you know, existing popular culture, like anything in it, poetry, music, books, TV show, it could be anything, politics, to make particular claims about the God of Israel. Mm. And even with this statement, like, somebody would like think this is controversial, right? Like, they'd be like, man, like, we should be separate from the world. Like, we should have nothing to do with it. But if you have nothing to, it's a saying. I don't know what the saying was, but basically it said, like, if you have nothing to do with the world, how are you going to reach the world? Like, oh, if you're so heavily minded, you'll be no earthly good. That's the saying. It was something like that, right? So, like, you have to relate to the people that you are around, right? You have to reach the people you are around. Did Jesus have nothing to do at all with earthly people? Like, no, he was with tax collectors. He was, the Pharisees asked, why are you hanging out with sinners? Why are you with the prostitutes? Why are you with the tax collectors? Why are you with the zealots? Like, why? Because he was trying to reach the people of his day. He even said it. He said, you know, what good is a doctor, right? No, I'm trying to find it. Justin, I know you got something. I'll let you talk, but I'm trying to find that quote that he said.
Yeah, I think that goes back to, I'll use the quote I really like. People want to know how much you care before they care how much you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes stories more powerful, especially in like Jesus's time. Like, Jesus had to give, like, if you read Jesus's stuff, like, they were actually really hard to swallow stuff. But I think the people were like, he already had such a good relationship with his disciples. He had good relationships with the people. Like, he showed an authenticity and authority that made people receive the stories a lot better. And I think that's what helps a lot of stories, because a lot of times I think, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit on what Sean and I have been talking about. Yes, we do want to reach out as many people as we want, but we don't want to go so far where we're treating them like projects, where we're like not treating them like, where we're, instead of treating them like people, we're treating them as like, oh, it's, this is like a number of souls that we have to save. I think that helps relate to today's culture, today's popular culture, is if you like show a care and understanding for somebody. Like, even if you're like older and you don't understand like what kids are doing nowadays, like the fact that you try and care, I think builds up that connection to make a story feel more authentic. Because a lot of times people will just try to use stories, or just try to use like whatever is popular nowadays, or just posting like something that sounds good on like a template or a meme or a starry sky to like just make it sound good. But it loses a lot of authenticity there if you don't have like that connection with somebody. If you don't have like that feeling that's supposed to accompany it.
Right. And that's what I was trying to say. Like, that's the biggest problem with any church, right? Like, churches are just not the cool thing to do because of that right there. Like, they want everybody to bow down to what they want, but they're not willing to serve what other people want. You see what I'm saying? So like, yeah, like people are sick. They're looking for something. Everybody has a need, right? And the greatest way to point it, this is my love, right? I don't know if you guys can tell, but I have a passion for it, right? Like, as a preacher, it's your job to make sure every need in a church gets met. You can't meet every single need. You need people around you to help you to do that, right? There's people Justin can reach that I can't reach. There's people I can reach that Justin can't reach. But us together, oh, we can reach a lot of people, but we have to be together, right? And that's with everybody in the church. It's called lay members. Everybody's a lay member in a church. Everybody. So like, everybody has significance in the church. Even the little baby, even especially the 5-year-old, especially the 12-year-old. The older, the better. Like, you know what I'm saying? The younger, the better. Like 8, 6, they got some ideas. Like, I'm gonna use an example. Like, we went to a learning academy, right, in the Emmy Church this year, and I was invited to be the worship leader. And it was like in July or something like that this year. And like, when I went, you know, I'm the worship leader for this youth day event for youth. It's for kids, guys. But instead of making an event for kids, for youth, they literally turned it into a church service like we do every single Sunday. Now, did they make some tweaks? Yes. But they did not make, they didn't make enough tweaks to make it a youth service. Like, it was literally a service for adults. Like, the adults loved it. The kids, they hated it. You could tell just looking at them. They didn't want to be there. It's a freaking youth day. We're supposed to be reaching the youth. This is why the millennials, people me and Jess's age, are not in church no more. Because they did stuff like that to us. Right? Mm-hmm. If it's a youth day, you got to do youth things for you so that they could love God like you love God. That's the goal. It's not so, you know, older people think in the Emmy Church, as an example, like they think like, well, we had it like this in our time period in 1950. It has to stay like this because it worked for me. No, not in today's time period. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's why, like, even millennials, we don't let our kids go to church no more. Because we already know what they're going to do, right? They're not going to care, right? Justin even said it. Like, people don't care how much you know. They want to see how much you care, right? That's the whole goal as believers. Jesus even said it, man. Love one another, right? The greatest of these is love. Nothing beats love, right? So, like, if you really love your neighbor, what are you going to do? You're going to make sure they get what they need, what they want. Not even what they want, what they need, right? And so that's the goal of every single church, right? So this is how you relate to people. This is how you make the gospel understandable to people. You literally see where they're at, what level they're at, and you relate the Bible to them. That's it. So like for the Learning Academy, literally like the preacher talked about Dr. Seuss. I asked one of my cousin's daughter now, like, do you know who Dr. Seuss is? She said, yeah. But like, I'm pretty sure, Justin, I don't know. I don't think the younger generation knows Dr. Seuss like we know Dr. Seuss.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, of course not.
Like, and then on top of that, even our parents, like, they really knew Dr. Seuss. You know what I'm saying? Like, they knew Dr. Seuss. They grew up with Dr. Seuss. Like, so like, the kids in today's time period, like, his sermon was about Dr. Seuss. The adults loved it. But the kids, like, it was not hitting anything.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, they try to force the kids to sing. They didn't want to sing. So, like, they had a whole, like, people my age singing up there. That, like, a random choir from somewhere else. Like, so, like, it was just a lot of stuff. Like, bro, like, if it's a youth service, all kids want to do is have fun. That's the first thing. Kids want to have fun. But what do people do in churches? Well, we ain't have fun when we were kids. We sat down. We had to sit in church. That's what they're going to do. No, they want to have fun. So that means they got to have games. That means they need to have icebreakers so they can get to know each other to make the experience more understandable. Then on top of that, even when you do those things, you tie in the games and the icebreakers to your message. Your message does not need to be longer than, honestly, 10 minutes. If you're talking to kids, right? I don't care what age, any kid, but especially five-year-olds, 5 minute sermon. You know what I mean? Because all the messages and all the games that you did will hit on the point that you're going to make for your sermon. That's it. That makes the whole experience. So the games, the message, the icebreakers, the experience, that's what kids want. And so kids won't change, right? That's the biggest thing. They want innovation. They want updates, not outdated stuff, right? So, yeah, like, you guys see what I'm saying. Justin, at your churches that you attend, man, did they ever sing, like, real, real old songs that kids hate, like, and then when they sung newer songs, like, y'all loved it? Like, you see what I'm saying?
I've been to some churches I've been to are like that. I feel like, I'm trying to think. Man, I feel like my more recent churches have had more modern music, though.
Okay.
I have been to, like, Church of Christ with my sister and her family. And it's, like, it's older songs, and they don't have a band. But I feel like it's not that bad. I don't know. I feel like the kids just go along with it.
Okay. Yeah, I know. When I grew up, man, cause I still remember, I was so traumatized in church, man. Like I said, I don't like AME, but like I'm here to help because there's a need that needs to be met. And I'm here to meet the need of just innovation, change. Like, you don't have to be traditional. Like, you can be traditional. That's fine. But you don't need to be traditional in every single area, especially with kids. You can stop that. And then there's certain age group that have anything to do with kids, no more. And they're still over the worship service, worship experiences for kid events. Like, it need to be all young people over that because we're more relatable and understand them more because it's about keeping them, not losing them, no more. Like, so like we're only losing generations to the church because of us not willing to change and adapt and make it understandable. Like, kids want to understand why. That's what millennials want. We want to know why we need to do something, right? A lot of times, people in any older generation older than us, like, they just think, like, we have to respect authority because they said something, we got to do it. But that's not any generation after millennials and millennials. Like, we need to know why we need to do something. As soon as you make it understandable and relatable in that way, then you got them hooked. Then everything that you do from that point on makes sense. But you have to make it make sense, right? And so that's the whole point with, like, this excerpt from this part that I read. You know, in chapter 2, we looked at examples of the ways ancient Israel told its stories by reworking existing popular genres to make particular claims about the God of Israel, right? So I was going to say, like, I was going to ask everybody a question, you know, how do we teach the Bible, right? So the answer is the Bible and the way the Bible was formulated and the way that the scribes translated the Bible with their culture, it still proves that it works. Like, what, how they went about formatting the Bible, like, literally the way that the scribes wrote the Bible, we've been saying it, like, they related the popular genres, the things going on in their culture, and they reworked it to like teach about God, teach about the revelation of God, right? And it was so relatable with their time period that it was relatable to our time period, right? So just with doing that, it keeps the Bible alive. It keeps the Bible fresh and new. So that's what the Bible is. It's active. It's living. It can go in any time period, in any culture. It does not die. God is not dead. That's a movie, right? Popular culture. Oh, they're not popular no more. But you guys see what I'm saying? Like, see, it's important to know these things, right? Because even what the scribes wrote is relevant still because it spoke about popular genres of their day. That's the key. So, like, we said that earlier, but, like, the author is really trying to hone in on that. And I was trying to read this scripture verse. Scripture verse was, like Vincent commented, was Luke 5:31-32. Jesus answered them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." So for me in my ministry, I can't speak for Justin, but for me in my ministry, I care a lot about kids. I'm like Deion Sanders, man. I just want to be with the kids. That's all. Like, I love kids. I'm trying to stay young. I'm trying to stay hip. I'm just trying to stay fly. Like, I want to know what is in the now right now so that, you know, I'm in the times. I don't want to ever be out of touch. Like, that would be my worst nightmare. Like, to be, that's like being like Captain America, see, in popular culture, right? That's like being in Captain America coming back. I don't even know when he came back. I think he came back like 150 years or 190 years from when he was alive. And then he was in New York City, like in the first Captain America movie. He was in New York City in 2012, like, and he was looking at the world like, dang, it looks different than, you know, he was, last time he was alive was 1920, right? So it was 100
years. World War II, so it wasn't it was only like 70 years.
70 years? I mean, but still, that's still, you know, huge that's awakening. Like,
I was trying to do the math, 150 years, no, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But you guys get it. I'm going to read another excerpt. Justin, you good? I'm going to keep on reading though.
Yeah, this, go for it.
Yeah, this part's real good, guys. So, like, this section for me is called, like, the Bible isn't devoid of culture, right? So this is one of my favorite parts of the book that related with just, you know, preach for today's time period, right? The theme of today's video. So the Bible isn't devoid of culture. So Cameron B. R. Howard wrote, "The text of the Hebrew Bible did not arise ex nihilo, that just means void, out of nothingness, you know, that's what that means. So devoid of any influence from the political, social, cultural interests and of ancient Israel or its surrounding cultures. On the contrary, the texts of the Old Testament reflect the influences of multiple traditions. Ancient Israel was never a people in isolation. And its literary stylings testify to contact with its neighbors. Nestled among powerful empires like Egypt and Assyria and perched beside the Mediterranean Sea, Israel was well suited for interactions with the surrounding civilizations." All right, Justin, next I'm going to let you read, man. I'll be reading a lot, but you got something to say on this one?
Yeah, I do like that. I wasn't sure what ex nihilo meant for a moment, but it did have, I think that's what you were saying. Like, it is, the scripture is just very alive. Like, it's able to apply to like so many different time periods because like the lessons have been able to been applied for a lot of different time periods. A lot of times like people may think like the Old Testament is like outdated or not applicable. Just because they don't want to follow what's like written in the Old Testament. It's like clear as that. Like, it's, there's evidence that there were consequences when people did not follow what happened in the Bible. Like, these weren't just, and I guess I'm talking about commandments of God or like instructions from God. Like, these instructions weren't just given to a people that were isolated from the world. They were given to a people that affected their lives, like had consequences in their lives. And you saw the consequences when they did not follow it. Like, that's evidence that it was not devoid of a culture. It was not devoid of like real lives. And going back to what Sean was saying, like, our younger generation wants to know why, like, why things are this way or why we do things. And I think we're in a time period where, like, back then, like, God would say something and they just knew to follow it. Otherwise, bad things would happen. Like, nowadays, we know there's a reason to, like, a lot of God's commandments now. I'm trying to think of, like, a good one. Like sex in the sex within the confines of marriage. Like, you see that there, gosh, you just see our culture, like, affected by people who have sex before marriage, sex as a purely carnal, purely physical act, and while cutting out the emotional ties to it. Like, you see negative effects of that. So, like, you have the why of those now. You see, like, you even have statistics that show, like, people who move in together before they get married are much more likely to separate. So you see, like, we are getting the whys for it now. And I feel like the most interesting thing is we are fine in the U.S. during this time period. We're finally seeing a culture that has moved away from God, and how lost, how destructive that is. Right. Like, you see the cult, as I was saying before, you saw consequences of people who didn't follow God's instructions in the Bible, because in their culture, like, that was just detrimental. But now you see the culture that has also moved away from God now, and you see the same consequences, you see the same hurt, you see the same bad decisions that are being made, and it just shows that the commandments, the instructions of the Bible apply for every culture, because God has given them to us for the good of us. And honestly, that's the amazing part of these instructions, is that they're able to be applied for different cultures, for different time periods, because I really think God prepared that in advance. Like, mm-hmm. It's just in our nature to follow these instructions, because God knows what's best for us.
Right. Yeah, I like how you said, you know, I had that in my notes, basically, but I'll say it like I said it. Just because something is old does not mean it is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what young people have to understand, and old people have to understand. Like, even though something's new doesn't mean it's irrelevant, right? All of it comes together. Like, everything's happening for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, we got to stop being so closed off to stuff. Right? Because when you're closed off, you miss seeing God, right? So the Bible is still relevant for the future. It's still relevant for the past. Like, it's relevant in whatever time period you want to put the Bible in, right? So, like I said, like Justin's been saying, like I just said, you know, just because something is old does not mean it is irrelevant or it should be disregarded or it's outdated or anything like that. So, And then also, we don't have to preach the Bible the same way all the time, nor should we, right? So, a lot of people think like a text has to be a certain way. No, it doesn't, right? There's a lot of revelations to receive from one text in the Bible, or from one Bible verse even. Like, so we got to stop saying like, this is what it says. Like, it may have one point. Yeah, I'll go with that. But it's not going to just be, this is the only way to preach that. Like, no, there's a lot of stuff to see in any text you want to slice, in whatever text you, and however you want to slice it. Like, it's the Bible. That's why we're going to be in heaven for all eternity, man. It's just too much to learn about God. It's too much we don't know. And then heaven, we're not going to know everything even when we get there, right? Like, no, even for all eternity, it's too much to learn, too much revelations, too much everything, right? And so that's what the author is really trying to convey with what she was writing, man. So then also I want to say, like, too, you know, even when the Bible was created, the writers were influenced by political, social, and cultural interests, like we read. And we must show our culture and the people of our day how the Bible is relevant in our day too, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what they did in their time period. Like, I'm going to read that. Like, I want you guys to see that, because I had everything highlighted so perfectly. Like, so the Hebrew text, which doesn't just mean the Old Testament, you know, the Pentateuch, anything like that. It didn't arise out of nothing, out of thin air. Like, people literally think that. Like, they just think, like, the Word of God just came and bam, like, no, it's a lot. The Bible's a lot more complex than that. It's a lot more complicated than that. Like, you know, it's a lot more. What's the word I'm looking for, Justin? Like, It's like complex, but it's like even more like complicated. No, I don't know. But yeah, guys, there's just a lot of nuances when it comes to like the Bible in so many ways. Like, for example, I'm not going to talk about it for this video, but in one of the books, and I think it's even the next chapter of this book, it talks about how like the Bible is innovative, which we've been throwing out that word. But she was saying that the Bible is filled with a lot of contradictions. And a lot of times with the contradictions, everybody in the church and new believers and believers in general, we avoid like the hard things to talk about, right? Like, for example, like with David, like we want to focus on all the good things about David and Solomon, but we don't ever talk about the bad things with David and Solomon. And I was talking about with Justin about that, like in one of the books I read, like it was talking about how David, one of his daughters, Tamar, was raped by her sibling, right? It was like the third oldest or second oldest, something like that. And her brother, actually, so her brother from the same mother, right? Like, he heard about it, and he wanted to get vengeance, but he waited. Like, he waited patiently. And he consoled his sister, Tamar. He went to his sister and took care of her. David never went to, it never said anything in the Bible about David going to see her at all. It could be because your worth as a woman in that time period is having babies. But if you're the daughter of a king, that means your worth is, can I marry you to, you know, somebody else of another country or some, another nation or something like that to make a alliance, right? To make my name greater, right? So like with Tamar being raped by her sibling, like she was damaged goods to David. David didn't even go see her. He went to go see the son that raped her, right? And not just that, it said that the son that raped her didn't want to see anybody. He said that I'm sick and I'm bedridden. I can't see nobody after the rape happened because he was infatuated with his sister Tamar. But it said as soon as he raped her, he couldn't even look at her. He hated her. That's what it said. And she even begged him, don't do this. And she gave a whole lot of reasons like, this is just going to make things worse. Like, why would you do that? Just marry me the right way. But he wasn't willing to do that. He wanted what he wanted at that point. Long story short, he ended up dead. But David went to go see her. I mean, see him, the son who raped her instead of Tamar. That says a lot about David. Like, you know, if that's the case, like, but like, why was that left off? Why was the woman when David fled from Jerusalem because his son Absalom was trying to get the throne and was threatening to kill him? He left Jerusalem, right? He left some of his wives and some of his children. David had a lot of wives. Solomon had a lot of wives. But like, if Solomon had over 1,000, you know, 700 wives, thousands of concubines or whatever, like, how many children you think he had? David had a lot. David had like 60. Solomon probably had way more. But only person that's mentioned for Solomon is Rehoboam. That's it. So you guys see what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of like stuff, unknowns, a lot of people's stories who aren't being told in the Bible, like Tamar, for example. Like, what happened to her? You know what I'm saying? Like her brother that, you know, consoled her and looked out for her, like he named his daughter after her, you know, to keep her name going, right? But like, what happened to her? Like, what happened to the wives that David left in Jerusalem? Like, he never went back to them. That we never got that. You know, the children, what happened to them, right? So like, there's so many people's stories who aren't being told, not to mention the women, guys, in the Bible. Like, how many wives did David have? And how many of them have a voice? Only people you really hear from is Michael. And you barely hear from her, right? So like, there's so many, they call it contradictions in the Bible, or nuances or just unknowns, stories that aren't being told, voices that aren't being said. And if we give those people voices, if we focus in on those things, we can get a new revelation from God. But a lot of times the Bible is so confrontational, and like there's some stuff that's hard to read and hard to preach, and you don't want to preach that because it'll offend somebody. So you miss out on getting a revelation from God. So like, yeah, the Bible wasn't made out of nothing. It wasn't devoid of any influence. Right. Literally, it was hitting on every single I would even venture to say the Bible hits on everybody's story. It hits on every single topic you ever face in life. But you can't hit on those topics if you're not willing to talk about everything. Yeah. If you're not willing to talk about the nuances, the unfamiliarities, like, you know, you can't be devoid of the stories. Right.
And if you don't talk about it in church with your kids, they're going to get that information or lessons from outside the church or from their friends, and who knows what they'll learn from there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to keep on saying stuff, man, but I'm going to go ahead and end the video because, like, we already had 1 hour 10
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize. Oh, shoot, we just hit 1 hour 10 minutes, yeah.
Right. How long you thought it was?
That seems to happen more and more often.
Right. Especially when we're having fun on video. But, yeah. I'm about to hit you with another one so you can see Justin matching with our book for today. So, this was another book review. The book was, The Old Testament for a Complex World. So, y'all go ahead and check out this book. It's amazing, man. Me and Justin are learning a lot from it. And like I always tell you guys, I got the best social media pages ever. Go to all of them. Follow, share, like, comment. Do all those things. Please help my pages grow. And then also, if you go to my YouTube channel, Upload Past Crossroads, I have a lot of playlists. Like, I really organize this very nicely. So, like, if you really enjoyed this video with me and Justin, just scroll down to where it says Our Podcast. And you can go to me and Justin's playlist right here to listen to us way more. And then also, this playlist. And this video relates to this playlist right here. You know, anytime we're breaking down a book, so me and Justin are going to be doing that way more. So this playlist is called Book Breakdowns or Book Reviews on my YouTube channel, Upload Past Crossroads. And then also, if you really enjoyed this book, me and Justin, I started another playlist just for this book specifically because we're going to be really breaking this book down and tearing it up because it's just too much stuff to glean from it. And then also, here goes Justin's YouTube channel, Chaplain's Log. So be sure to subscribe to his YouTube channel. And click the bell when you subscribe to our channels. That means you're turning on the post notifications so you're notified anytime we upload another video. And then please make sure to like, comment, and share on every single one of our videos. If you do those things, you really help us out. And then here goes Justin's Facebook page, Justin Lee Howell. Mine's Sean Christopher Jenkins. You can befriend us on there. And then send us a DM on there. If you got any questions, we'll do a video on the questions that you ask. That's what we normally do with people who ask us questions on social media. So thanks for tuning in, guys. You guys have a great one. We don't see you again. But, yeah, God bless you. And, have a great rest of your week. Peace.